AC McGillicuddy.
What's going on, Dan Douglas? The third.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
How you doing? You can't take it with you, AC.
I know. I was planning on taking it all with me, Dan, but
what were you planning to take with you? Just like
just memories. You know, memories.
Just like King Tut.
Yeah, right. You
know, fill your tomb with all your tap dancing shoes and
yeah.
Your hat collection and
no, I realize now I just can't do it. I'm gonna have to leave it all to you, Dan. I'm gonna leave it all to you.
That's what the pharaohs thought. They thought they could take it with them.
Apparently.
Chinese too, right? Don't they have all those tombs with the terracotta soldiers?
Yeah, but I don't know what the significance of those were in terms of the afterlife.
And what's the deal with the money that they burn in some parts of China?
No, I don't know a whole lot about that. I think it has something to do with the ancestors and the spirits. And, of course, the money represents some kind of value.
Yeah, that you can take with you on the other side.
Yeah, that I don't know. But what about you, Dan? What are you planning?
We'll make something up.
What are you gonna take with you?
What am I going to take with me? I'm going to take you with me.
Oh, no,
if
please.
I go, you go.
No.
We are a team. We're a duo.
That's right. Maybe
we're
we should.
Tied together.
That's right.
Yeah. Till death do us part.
Deep English in heaven.
That's how deep English is.
We run very deep. Run very deep.
Do you have a will?
I should, but I don't.
Don't tell people that.
I just told many people that.
Stop the recording.
I think I'll write one as soon as we finish recording this.
I'll help you with that.
Yeah, I bet you will.
Everyone should have a will. Interestingly, I learned, you know, one of her stories was about the guy, the Portuguese aristocrat.
Uh-huh.
What was his name? Luis Carlos?
He had a very long name. I do remember
that. Yeah. Yeah, I noticed his friend just called him Luis Carlos.
Yeah, Carlos de Noronha Cabral da Câmara.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
that's why this guy had no friends.
they didn't know which name to call him. I think it's kind of cool to have many names. I only have like three names. I'd love to have seven or eight names.
Aaron McGillicuddy.
McGillicuddy.
Jose. Do you have a Chinese nickname?
No, not really. Well, they used to call me Tang Ailun, right? Oh, so yeah. Tang is it means soup because my last name is Campbell. I kind of made it up, and Ailun is just that's just a phonetic version of my name Aaron.
So for those people who don't know, Campbell's is a famous soup brand.
Yeah, famous soup brand. That's right.
Which
yeah.
is why they call it just soupy.
But I would love to have a name from every culture that I've lived in. I think that would be really cool.
Oh, yeah. I'm
yeah. Sure get a Japanese way. Name, a Chinese name, a Mexican, like Spanish name. It'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, there's nothing that stops me from doing that. I can legally change my name if I wanted to.
So anyhow, this article I was reading about, I think Luis Carlos, his shortened name, is that apparently wills are not very common in Portugal.
Really?
So it's a little bit odd.
Huh.
And the article I read quoted some lawyers saying, you know, we don't like to talk about death. And I think that normally your money just goes to your family.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't have any family, the government takes it.
I see.
So it was a little bit unusual to have a will there. Mm. And apparently this guy had some bones to pick with the government. Maybe he felt he was overtaxed over his life. I'm not sure what his problem with the government was. But he wanted to make sure the government didn't get their hands on his money.
Right. So this is the guy that gave totally random people money and other such things after he died, right?
Yeah, this was one of the more recent stories. A couple of the other strange stories about inheritances were from the 19th century.
Oh, I see.
This guy, I think he passed away in 2007.
Uh-huh. So, yeah, that's pretty recent.
Yeah, and some 13 years before, he decided he was going to do something crazy, and apparently the notary even asked him, "Are
you sure you want to do that?" Well, the one for me that stood out that I thought was really interesting was this Canadian lawyer, Archibald MacArthur. After he bit the dust, he sort of gave these inheritance, you know, gifts to people to kind of, you know, put them in odd situations.
It's just like you just wanted to mess with people.
Yeah, I just thought that was really an interesting way to give money away. Right.
The teetotalers, they were actually prominent Protestant ministers.
Uh-huh.
And he sounded like he just wanted to mess with them.
Yeah. I mean, well,
he wanted to make sure that they wouldn't benefit unless they were participating.
Right. But how would you like react to something like that if someone gave you, I don't know, some kind of ownership or...
Okay, like $700,000 of stock in nuclear power.
Yeah, or some affiliation with some racist group or some hatred, you know, group of organization or company that does really bad things. Like, what would you do with it? Just sell it? Give it away?
It's kind of hard to think of any examples. I mean, yeah. It's not like some racist group owns some right. major company. But for the example of nuclear power, I think I would just sell it.
Uh-huh.
It's not like me refusing to sell that equity.
Right.
It is changing anything.
Yeah.
What would you do?
I don't know.
If there was a condition that to get that equity, I had to, for the next 20 years, work for this nuclear power.
Yeah, right.
I think I would have to refuse it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's what I would do as well. You just drop it.
But anyhow, it caused me to look up the origin of the word teetotaler.
Yeah.
Do you know what the origin is?
No, I don't. Teetotaler, T as in, it's T-E-E, I think it's spelled, not T-E-A, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know.
Golf. They were golfers.
Really?
Golf tees.
No.
No. It's actually in dispute, but one of the more common origin stories is that, you know, sometime in the early 20th century when there was prohibition going on in, I don't know if that was just in the U.S. or in Canada too. Certainly uh-huh. in the U.S.
Uh-huh.
There was some prominent advocate for abstaining from alcohol or for prohibition,
uh-huh.
and he said that moderation is not enough. We should totally
uh-huh.
abstain. And people really took to the way he enunciated or stuttered over that T, and they started calling themselves teetotalers to the T, totally abstain.
Wow.
Hey, I always thought it was T, like T-E-A. I don't think I've ever written it before.
Oh, yeah. No, it's T-E-E for sure. I just never thought about the origin of it, yeah. So,
the three friends that he made live with each other. Yeah, that was pretty funny. The three friends he knew disliked each other.
Yeah. Make them live together. Yeah.
Yeah, you got some friends that I wouldn't want to live with.
I have some friends you wouldn't want to live with?
Yeah.
Well, you do. Yeah, you got some friends I wouldn't want to live with either. But this idea, another interesting part of the lesson is for me is the idea that of not passing on your wealth to your children, or at least large parts of it. Like Bill Gates and Warren Buffett, you know, they're only giving a very tiny portion of their fortune to their children, or at least Bill Gates, for that matter. And the majority of it will go to charity. And the reason being that, you know, Gates, for example, believes that giving his children that money can weaken their character. They need to learn to be self-reliant. They got to find their own way. And if that doesn't happen, it could spoil the child.
Yeah, I'm certainly. I think it's a curse having too much money at a young age.
Yeah.
I mean, we have yeah, well, I don't want to name any names, but we know somebody in the town that we live in, or the town I used to live in.
Yeah.
Came into a lot of money when he was young, and I think he didn't have any ambition in life.
Right.
Because he knew he could fall back on that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think, and I think it's also a matter of perspective as well. Like, I mean, neither you nor I was born with a silver spoon in our mouth in terms of our perception on the world. But if you look at just like the world, you know, like internationally, globally, some people would argue that we were born with a silver spoon in our mouth. When you think about the fact that, you know, 80% of all humanity lives on less than $10 a day. And, you know, we're not part of that 80%. So I think also it's a matter of perspective as well. I wonder to what extent, you know, people who are in the developed world, middle class citizens, you know, maybe we feel that in our day to day existence that, you know, we were not born with a silver spoon in our mouth, and therefore, you know,
I get what you're saying. Yeah, certainly, right. Certainly, we've inherited huge advantages over the majority of the world who weren't able to
have those privileges,
afford a university education,
right?
Maybe, and many that weren't even able to afford the nutrition,
right,
necessary to give you the energy and to have the focus to get an education, to think beyond your daily needs,
right?
For sure, but I think a lot of these billionaires that are refusing to give their money to their children are drawing an important distinction. I'm sure they are giving them a lot of advantages,
like
best education, but they don't want to just give them a fortune.
Yeah.
That will stop their drive to create anything in life.
Yeah.
Though actually Warren Buffett is giving each of his children $2 million, which is quite a lot of money.
Oh, is he?
But, you know, he's worth billions. So. Yeah,
he's a character. I mean, he's worth billions, but I think he still lives in the same house that, you know, he started out in back in like the late 50s or something. Like,
yeah, I once saw a picture of it, and I bet it's a house that costs, you know, just a few $100,000.
Yeah.
And he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Though I don't understand how that's possible. Being worth that much must put your security in danger. He must own all the property around him.
Yeah, I wonder. I have
security
no idea.
Houses set up. There must be something to stop people from kidnapping him.
Yeah, because he would be a primary kidnapping target, would he not?
Yeah, sure.
Jeez.
So yeah, I thought that was interesting that so many billionaires have signed on to at least give the majority, if not all of their money, the majority of their money away.
Right.
They recognize that they have more than they can ever use, and that will probably just handicap their children if they were to give it to them.
Right. It makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. I don't see any point in keeping it unless you value some sort of you know, family legacy, dynasty, you know, hundreds of years into the future, and you want to ensure that your progeny for many generations to come are well off.
Yeah.
Some people may value that.
Yeah. I liked what the former mayor of New York City, Bloomberg, said, also a business billionaire, who said that who was not giving his money away to his children, who said that the best thing he felt he could do for his children was to make the world a better place.
Right.
Through giving his money away to social causes.
Yeah, that makes
sense. Rather than give it to them.
Yeah. Yeah, can you imagine like being a teenager again and knowing that when you turned you know, 18 or became an adult at the age of 18 or 20 that, you know, you would have these hundreds of millions of dollars at your disposal. That would definitely change your perspective on how you spend your time and how what kind of things you do to develop your mind and your skills and Jeez.
So that that story on epigenetics with the starving Swedish adolescents creating healthier children and grandchildren, that that really blew my mind.
Yeah, that that's something I think maybe a lot of the general public hasn't really heard much about, you know, or is the epigenetics or the epigenome, because when people our age were educated about genetics in college or high school, I mean, we learned about DNA, and that was it. That was the genetic code. That was the that was what was passed on to your progeny. And then now they're seeing that, you know, throughout the course of an organism's life, that certain genes are tagged in a way that represents some sort of interaction with the environment and how those genes are expressed and translated into proteins. So there's this process, of course, you know, in reproduction where that's wiped clean. All those tags are removed. And but they're showing now that some of them actually do. I think it's a very tiny percentage, like maybe 1% or something like that, actually remain. And they influence the expression of proteins in the child. So I think, yeah, that's really, really interesting. And it may show that how we live our life and the things that happen to us in our lives do have an imprint in future generations.
Yeah, I remember in school learning about nature versus nurture and, you know, how what shapes us is a mixture of our DNA, our genetic composition that we get from our parents and from what we learn from the environment.
Right.
And, you know, this lens of looking at epigenetics is showing how they're all, one way of looking at it is that they're all the same thing, or possibly the same thing, that these, what we're learning from the environment has, can cause, our experiences can cause a chemical reaction inside of us that can modify the way our DNA is expressed.
Right.
So it's interesting to kind of see that this is like the kind of the crossroads of nature and nurture.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
Or what's intrinsic and what we get from the outside coming together.
Right. It makes sense. It does make sense. But yeah, there was that one statistic that was quite shocking, related to, you know, boys who ate a lot of food during this critical age in their, you know, adolescence. I think it was between the ages of 9 and 10. Passed down a 400% greater risk of diabetes and heart disease to their grandchildren. It's like, man, I certainly wasn't starving when I was between the ages of 9 and 12. I wonder what my grandchildren are going to go through. It's like, oh my God. maybe we should be, you know, putting our young children through periods of fasting.
We got girls. We have girls, but any Deep English listeners with young boys, put a lock on their refrigerator.
That's right.
Your great grandchildren will thank you.
Yes, limit their caloric intake. Oh man.
Well,
I guess that does it for this month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So, until next time.
Well, yeah, I'm going to, as soon as we finish our conversation here, Dan, I'm going to write my will.
Okay.
And is there anything in particular you want me to put in there for you?
All I want is your loyalty.
Loyalty. Okay. After my death, I will give you whatever remaining loyalty is present.
All I want you to do is to grow up to be a fine, upstanding young man. Okay. And I'll be happy.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dan. I don't
as
know
your
how...
big brother, as a big brother figure to you, that's all I'm asking
okay,
for.
Okay. I'll put that. I'll make sure that's at the very top of the will. Okay. So that's all the right. first thing the lawyer reads.
All right.
All right, man. Okay. We'll see you next time.